abandon free market principles to save the free market system.
In a world of conventional confusion,
There will be time for them to make profits. Now's not that time.
Daddy, what do taxes pay for?
Oh, why everything. Policemen, trees, sunshine. And let's not forget the folks who just don't feel like working, God bless them.
Don't be afraid of your freedom.
Prepare to unshackle your mind.
An idea whose time has come cannot be stopped by any army or any government.
Your professor has arrived. Tom Woods. Beware, citizen. You are now departing from the world of allowable opinion. The Tom Woods Show.
And welcome, everybody, on this Friday, October 11th, 2013. Tom Woods here, and today our topic is Bitcoin. I know there are a lot of you who are deeply interested in Bitcoin. There are others who have no interest in Bitcoin whatsoever. And still others who have no idea what on God's green earth I am talking about. Well, today we're going to try and sort this all out for you guys, but in particular, instead of doing a Bitcoin 101, we're going to focus on the future of Bitcoin in the wake of the shutdown of Silk Road and all the fallout that's come from that. So we'll be asking my guest today all about that. And I do want to sound sort of an ecumenical note here at the outset that I have encountered in libertarian circles a lot of support for Bitcoin and some hostility. And sometimes this gets ugly. There are people who are hostile are saying, if you're involved with Bitcoin, you're some kind of idiot or loser. And there are people who are deeply involved in it who say, if you're not involved in it, there's something the matter with you. Your fight against the state is incomplete and pathetic. And I think, obviously, we can have disagreements here, but for heaven's sake, let's not excommunicate each other over things like this. Let's remember that we're friends here in the ultimate struggle, so let's try and behave ourselves and be generous toward each other. And this is I have this fault too. I talk a lot about conducting yourself properly when you're in a dispute and not throwing names at people and trying to be courteous, and I don't always follow my own advice, and that's my problem, and I got to work that out. But let's all try and bear this in mind as we go forward. We'll get to Eric in just a minute. I'm on my way to Las Vegas. Tonight I've got a speech to the Sovereign Society, their total wealth symposium there, and I've decided to make a whole weekend out of it with my wife. So we're going to enjoy ourselves. We're going to be doing a bunch of things, seeing some shows, and she's never been to Vegas before, so I'm sure we'll have a good time, and maybe I'll have a mini report for you when I get back, but that's my activity today. Don't forget, next weekend, October 19th, those of you in the Raleigh, North Carolina area, we got a big event, Nullify Now in Raleigh. The MC is going to be your favorite SiriusXM radio host, Mike Church. If you don't listen to him in the morning, you really should. He's on from 6 to 9 a.m. Eastern on Sirius Patriot. On that show, I don't know what number it is, but you can fish around and find it. He's the only tolerable one, pretty much, on that station. He's very much worth listening to. Plus, your host will also be there as I'm the keynote speaker, actually. I have to look more closely. I don't want to say that. Then it turns out I'm just some guy doing a workshop. I don't know. So that's going to be a lot of fun. I met our guest today, Eric Voorhees, back in February of this year. We had lunch together, and I remember our time together not simply because of the great pleasure of his company, but also I remember it vividly because the previous night I had a car accident. I have not had an accident since I think I was, 17 or 16 or something. And it was some stupid thing. I was following somebody too closely and I slightly scratched the person's fender. It was hardly noticeable, that sort of thing. But I got into a smash it up accident because I was in Massachusetts. And I know you don't need to hear this story, but once I start with something, I have to finish it. It was one of these things where I just didn't know how the road worked. Like from my vantage point, it looked like if I pulled out and took a left, I could get into the right lane and drive down the road. But it was an optical illusion because what I thought was the other curb was actually an island. Yeah, there's another curb, but you'd have to drive over the island to get to the side of the road where you can drive on the right. And so once I've driven all the way out into the middle of the road, I see that I can't go any further. I can't take a left. All I can do is take a right. Well, I've driven halfway out, and there's oncoming traffic, and it was awful. What do I sit here and wait to be smashed, or do I get it in reverse really fast and try and get back into that parking lot as fast as I could. I took the second option, which I think was the better of the two, but it didn't work out so well. But anyway, you know, it was all taken care of. It was fine. But I was supposed to have dinner with Michael Nystrom of the Daily Paul that night. And there he is waiting at the restaurant for me. And I get on the phone and say, Michael, I had a car accident. It's the worst day ever. This is terrible, horrible. So he was ready for me with a drink by the time I got there. And I'll tell you, I was driving in that car like I was on the driving test with the trooper next to me. I mean, between that spot and the restaurant. So anyway, you didn't need to hear that, but I couldn't help it. Anyway, Eric Voorhees is with us today. Eric today is speaking just as an individual, not with any institutional affiliation. So I'll just say that Eric has been involved in numerous Bitcoin startups. He's really been into this issue since he more or less got in on the ground floor with Bitcoin. He's written on the subject of, he's written on a great many things, but in particular on the subject of Bitcoin and the regression theorem. And if you're sort of an Austro-Bitcoinian dork, this is a interesting subject to you about the origin of money and does Bitcoin's origin conform with the Austrian Misesian understanding of where money has to come from. And Eric has argued that it does. So you can look up Eric Voorhees, Eric with a K, Voorhees, V-O-O-R-H-E-E-S, Bitcoin regression. If this sort of thing interests you, if not, I understand. That's okay. We're not all this way. But I had Eric on in the past on the Peter Schiff show, and he's an excellent source on this because he's, although he's deeply involved in Bitcoin, he also can explain it and talk about it in a way that laymen can understand. So I'm very glad right now to welcome to the program Eric Voorhees. Eric, glad to talk to you again.
Hey, Tom. Thanks for having me.
You know, the last time you and I talked was when I was hosting the Peter Schiff show, and I had you on to do kind of a Bitcoin 101 show for people. And I can tell you from experience, when you post something to YouTube that's not really a video, it's just an audio interview with a video slide on it, it doesn't usually get that many views. But just before talking to you, I just checked, and we're at almost 65,000 views of that. So obviously there's an interest in this, there's a need for it. So we won't do Bitcoin 101 here. But people who want that, I would recommend just go to YouTube, type in Woods Bitcoin, and my interview with Eric will come up. But nevertheless, I feel like there are going to be people in the audience who have no idea what on God's green earth Bitcoin is. So let's at least start off with the best you can do explaining in a nutshell, without any nuance, for the layman, what Bitcoin is.
Sure. So Bitcoin is a digital currency, and it's a payment system through which people send that digital currency. So it's basically a way to send digital units called Bitcoins between any two people that are using the system. And Bitcoins are not tied to any commodity or any government fiat currency. They are their own currency unit, and the price of them fluctuates on the open market.
Now, what's the benefit of Bitcoin? Why would somebody be interested in Bitcoin?
Well, there are several reasons. One is just people who prefer an alternative to government money might really like Bitcoin. But practically speaking, you can send any amount of money anywhere in the world instantly with almost no fee. So compare that to, you know, any bank or credit card, and it really blows it out of the water. So some people use it for ideological or moral reasons because they don't like using the government's money. And some people use it purely because it is a better payment system, much faster and much cheaper.
Well, I wanted to have you on specifically this week. I mean, I would have preferred to do it sooner, but I'm just starting up the show. And I think a lot of people are interested in the whole matter of Silk Road and the shutdown of Silk Road and how that happened. And is this, I guess the first I would want you to do, I want you to do three things for us. First, tell people what Silk Road is or was. Then secondly, how did it get shut down? And is there any weakness in Bitcoin that's been exposed because of the shutdown of Silk Road? And then thirdly, does this mean there's going to be added surveillance or harassment or spying on people who are interested in or trading in Bitcoin?
Okay, yeah. So what is Silk Road? A lot of people had heard about Silk Road over the last few years. It was one of the things that first got a lot of press attention for Bitcoin. Basically, it was a website where users would buy and sell illicit drugs, so things that are illegal in almost every country. And this was not a website that you would find in the normal internet, but it existed over what's called the Tor network, which is sort of like a dark internet. And the Tor network anonymizes internet traffic, so you can't really tell from where a visitor is coming from or where a server is hosted. So Silk Road was a marketplace for drugs that lived on the dark internet under Tor. And of course, you can't buy drugs online with your credit card, because then there is a paper trail of what you've been spending your money on, because credit cards obviously have no privacy whatsoever. So Silk Road instead used Bitcoin, because Bitcoin, one of its attributes is that it is pseudonymous or nearly anonymous, depending on how careful you are with it. Your Bitcoin account is not attached to any name or address or any identifying information at all. So if you're careful in how you use your Bitcoin accounts, you can do so with a great deal of privacy. And that's what was used on Silk Road.
Okay, well then, why didn't Silk Road go on forever?
So Silk Road has been running, I guess, for about 3 years. But last week, the alleged operator of Silk Road was caught by the FBI, and the servers were seized and shut down. So Silk Road is no more. It is gone now. Looking at how the FBI actually carried out this attack, mostly it was due to some careless mistakes made by the operator of Silk Road. So if you're trying to run something, you know, purely anonymously for many years, you can't mess up. And this guy messed up a few times. And it was enough for the government to piece some things together and figure out who he was and where he was, and ultimately arrest him.
So, in other words, this is not a matter of people, because I think the way this was spun, at least initially, to some people, especially by Bitcoin skeptics, was to say, "Aha! You see, you people thought that with Bitcoin nothing could be tracked, and now look, everybody's transactions." In fact, are easily visible to everybody. Can you clear up the actual, to what extent is Bitcoin anonymous, or can it be made anonymous, and if so, how?
Sure. So when you create a Bitcoin account, it's just a long string of numbers. Think of it like a Swiss bank account number, and it's not attached to any information about you. Now, if you go out into the world and post that address in places, if you put your Bitcoin address on your Facebook page, now suddenly it is not anonymous anymore. Now suddenly that address is very much attached to your real world identity. And so if you want to use it in a way that is actually anonymous, you have to take a great degree of care in how you behave with it. And if you take that care, you can achieve a great deal of anonymity, but you just have to be careful. So the thing to understand about this Silk Road issue is that the government did not find the operator of the site or take him down or seize the servers due to any vulnerability or problem with Bitcoin. They weren't tracking money around. They weren't attaching Bitcoin payments to real world users. They were going at it from the, you know, network security side and just general police work, trying to find out who this guy was, and they were able to do so. It really had nothing to do with Bitcoin at all, and Bitcoin was, so, you know, the strongest link in a chain that actually was weak elsewhere, if that makes sense.
Well, I wonder if this is related to an item I read a few days ago. And let me just read a few sentences of this to you and to the listeners here. Closing down the Silk Road and, well, closing down Silk Road and arresting its alleged operator has left the FBI in uncharted territory. After shuttering the hidden site, law enforcement went to work confiscating the money and materials belonging to, well, the alleged operator. But they say that they're finding that the more than 600,000 bitcoins in his personal fortune are still inaccessible to them. And then it goes on to say, the only way to move bitcoins out of a private wallet is to have the corresponding private key to authorize the transaction. The FBI has been unable to get through the encryption, leaving all those bitcoins, amounting to roughly $80 million at current rates, out of reach. Now, I don't know, maybe that's changed over the past few days and they figured something out, but Can you comment on this?
Yeah, I'll clarify a few things. So first of all, they were able to seize some coins. They seized coins that were held basically on the live Silk Road server. These were coins that were in what's called a hot wallet, or meaning a Bitcoin wallet that is very much online, not necessarily encrypted, not stored safely. And the reason that you would have a hot wallet is because it can be used for live transactions very quickly. So most Bitcoin businesses have a hot wallet where money is going in and out quickly, and it's not super secure. And then they keep their savings in a much more secure form called a cold wallet or cold storage. So the FBI got the hot wallet, 26,000 Bitcoins from the Silk Road website. Most of those belong to users of the site who had Bitcoins deposited in their Silk Road account. But the government has not been able to get the 600,000 Bitcoins that apparently belong to the operator of Silk Road. They have his wallet that has all these Bitcoins in it, but they can't break the encryption. And this is quite funny, actually, because, you know, they spend billions of dollars building these NSA research facilities and have all the supercomputer power in the world, and yet they can't get into the Bitcoin wallet of this guy because it was secured properly. So this is a strong testament to the fact that Bitcoin, when used properly, is really quite bulletproof.
So are you saying, in other words, let me make sure this, I'm clear on this. You're saying that not only can they not get access to those Bitcoins now, but unless he buckles and spills the beans or something and gives them the information they need, they'll never be able to access them?
Correct. They would have to torture him into providing the password. And if, depending on how he set it up, he might not even know his own password. He may have, you know, set something up in such a way that he doesn't even know it. There are certain ways to do that. But basically, if they don't get his password, they can't get those Bitcoins ever.
All right.
And what's further entertaining about this is that Bitcoin wallets can be copied. So even though they have his wallet, it's likely that that wallet exists in other places. Maybe he had copies with friends or trusted partners who he worked with. Maybe there's one buried in his backyard. But anyone who has a different copy of the wallet and has the password can still spend those coins. So even though the government has the 600,000 coins, they can't spend them, and anyone else who has a password still can. So they could, at any moment, vanish from under the FBI's fingers.
Well, what do you think about this thing called Zero Coin, which was sort of suggesting that there isn't enough built into Bitcoin to guarantee anonymity, and so if you have zero coin, this makes you better off. So, do you think this is overkill? Is this a misunderstanding? I mean, what's the deal? How do we understand something like zero coin?
Yeah, so Bitcoin is a very diverse ecosystem of developers and interests and software, and as I mentioned before, it's not automatically anonymous. You have to be careful with how you use it. So there are some people out there who think the anonymity is extremely important, and so they spend their time, writing more software to improve the anonymity aspects of Bitcoin. Other people don't care about anonymity at all, and they build software that doesn't care about that type of thing. So you really have people working in all different directions in this ecosystem. Zerocoin, I'm not an expert on it, but in general, anything that improves privacy without causing other problems is typically a good thing. I tend to think that the privacy afforded by just the standard Bitcoin is extremely good. It's mostly a case of just knowing how to use it properly.
Now, I think of myself as being a very much a sympathizer of Bitcoin. At some point, I want to have libertyclassroom.com accept Bitcoins, and I just haven't gotten around to it. And I'm sure it's easy, and I can hire somebody to do it for me, and I've just been a lazy bum, and I haven't. So I'm more or less in your corner. But I think just for the sake of devil's advocate here, at this particular moment especially, I mean, I remember I walked into Panera Bread for lunch, and there on the front page of USA Today was the Silk Road story. Now, the guy I was having lunch with had never heard of Bitcoin before, and the story was zooming right over his head. But there it was on the front page. So it seems to me that at a time like this, if you're going to go to a Bitcoin conference and you're going to be out there and be very vocally and openly associated with Bitcoin, you have to be, you have to expect that there are going to be people you don't like, namely the authorities, so-called, who are going to be very interested in you, who may be tracking you. I mean, what is there anything to be concerned about? And I mean, what are your thoughts about
this? Yeah, that's a really good question. The authorities have obviously been aware about Bitcoin for a few years. And I've, you know, being involved in a number of Bitcoin businesses, something that's very important is how the government will react to Bitcoin and Bitcoin companies. And it's very important to understand that Bitcoin is not just this underground currency that's used for drugs. It is used for everything that money is used for. People buy the most innocent things online with it. They use it to pay each other for beers at bars. It's used just as any money. And I think most government people that are interested in this understand that point. They know that only a small percentage of Bitcoin users are involved in illegal activities. They see it as something that is innovative. They don't quite understand it. They don't know how they should regulate it. But they don't see it as this terrible technology that they need to shut down. There are many companies in the U.S., venture-backed companies, that have raised millions of dollars from prominent tech investors that are explicitly Bitcoin companies. They use their real names. They have offices. They have employees. They're not hiding from anyone. And they don't need to be shy about being involved in Bitcoin. And what's really, I think, important about this Silk Road lesson is that a lot of people, I think, incorrectly assume that that Bitcoin existed because Silk Road was there, that the only real use case of Bitcoin was that people bought drugs online. And those of us who have been involved in this for a few years know that that's not true at all, but it's hard to prove that. So now that Silk Road is gone, people are going to see that the Bitcoin value doesn't drop to zero, the transactions aren't falling off a cliff, it's still being used just as much as it was before. The price has actually recovered all the way since the drop last week. So there's been almost no effect on the price. And people will realize that Bitcoin is much bigger than the Silk Road. And it wasn't Bitcoin that relied on Silk Road. It was actually Silk Road that relied on Bitcoin.
Yeah, that's, I was just about to ask you to tell us about what kind of value fluctuation that we saw. But it's interesting to note that it did recover. Now, the average person who, you know, maybe doesn't know a whole lot about Bitcoin, but follows headlines and financial headlines, it does seem that we've been seeing an increase in headlines about this or that aspect of Bitcoin, or there's this firm or this person having either more government oversight or regulation or harassment. I mean, doesn't there seem like there's been a cluster of stories like this? And if that's the case, is there any reason for concern by people using it, or is the thing just so bulletproof that this is just like trying to take Superman down with a machine gun?
It's fairly correct to use that Superman and the machine gun analogy. A lot of people, you know, not everyone that's involved in Bitcoin is an extreme libertarian who doesn't want the government around at all. There are people who think governments are great and they just need to regulate in a smart way. And so a lot of them will advocate that the governments, whether in the U.S. or elsewhere, need to create regulation and control Bitcoin in a prudent manner. So they go about doing that. But if you really understand Bitcoin and you realize how the distributed payment network works, you don't need to fear the regulation, because the people who don't wish to participate in that system can use Bitcoin in whatever way they want. It is a tool that no one controls. And so it doesn't matter what Washington says about it or does to it. It is something that anyone can use for any purpose whatsoever.
Now, I'm sure people's appetites have been whetted a bit by this. And again, we've been a bit cryptic because we haven't answered a lot of the objections or the, well, how does this work? What's a wallet? And that sort of thing. That, I recommend the YouTube video we mentioned at the beginning. But also, are there online resources where the absolute newbie can go?
Yeah, but I think one thing that's important is that you're not going to understand Bitcoin from just a 10-minute read through a Wikipedia article. It is a new world of technology. It would be like trying to learn all the things that the internet was in the early days of the internet. And so if you're actually interested in Bitcoin, spend an afternoon and learn about it. Spend a few hours really understanding it, because just like myself, when I first heard about it, I was extremely skeptical and thought it was really stupid. But then after a few hours of educating myself on it, once it clicked, then it clicked. But people need to actually spend a little time doing that. So I'm not going to recommend one place to get started. I would just say dedicate some time and treat this as an important tool that you should learn about, just as every important tool you use, from your car to your computer, and spend some time educating yourself.
Eric, before I let you go, do you mind if I ask you a personal question?
Sure.
You've relocated to Panama. Can you shed some light on what motivated that decision and what life has been like for you down there?
Right. So I've lived abroad a couple times. I think there's a lot of value in getting outside of the sort of U.S. bubble. But one of the companies I've been involved with, we had started up in the U.S., but things are expensive in the U.S., tax rates are high, and because Bitcoin is a global ecosystem, most of our customers will be outside of the U.S. So we didn't want to hamstring ourselves to the U.S. regulatory apparatus if we were going to be working with rural farmers in Kenya. So we chose to leave, and we went to Panama City because it is a financial center, it has low taxes, and it's not too far from the U.S. So, you know, when we need to travel to conferences and to see our family, we're not super remote.
Well, Eric, I appreciate your time. I mean, I thought of you first of all as the guy to talk to who can, you know, it's I think it's hard to deal with Bitcoin in layman's terms because it depends on the level at which you want to understand it. I guess it's sort of like the internet, right?
Yeah.
I mean, I don't need to really understand fully how the internet works in order to benefit from it. And so
right.
when somebody
or like
tells
me... like a car, right? You don't
exactly.
Need to know
I have no idea how a car works.
Yeah.
I have not the slightest idea. But and when I hear people talk about cars and the internet at a very high level, I just think this is hopeless. I'll never understand this. But you can talk about it at both levels. And so I really appreciate that. And I hope you can be my Bitcoin go-to guy when there are items in the news.
Absolutely. I always love talking about it.
All right. Thanks again, Eric.
Thank you, Tom.
All right, that's it for the program today. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you so much for listening and for subscribing at iTunes and giving us such a great running start there on iTunes. I really, really appreciate that. Don't forget, today is the last day of my giveaway. I'm giving away copies of Rollback, which is my book about basically everything and how you can, it's arguments against everything, the Fed, the military-industrial complex, everything is in there, for people who join my LibertyClassroom.com. So check out LibertyClassroom.com where you can learn real stuff while you're driving your car. It's just like the Tom Woods Show, except longer. So great courses by great people. I'm going to have pretty much all these people on as guests at one time or another. We've already talked to Kevin Gutzman, but many other great folks to come. And also, of course, for homeschoolers, make sure and check out RonPaulHomeschool.com because I'm making courses for that, and it's killing me, but it's super worthwhile. So please check that out. Come on back next week for more episodes. TomWoodsRadio.com is where we broadcast every day, the stream at noon Eastern. And we've even got a chat room for during the stream at noon Eastern at TomWoodsRadio.com. So check that out. And of course, when you're buying your plasma TV from Amazon, remember TomWoodsRadio.com. Enter Amazon from there. And at no cost to you, you can help us keep the lights on. Thanks, everybody. See you next week.
The Tom Woods Show.